Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today, we report on criticism of the international community for remaining indifferent or unconcerned about human rights abuses. The criticism comes from Navi Pillay, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Regrettably, the international community remains unable to consistently react strongly and quickly to crises, including situations of grave human rights violations with high potential for regional overspill.
Then, we report on a new book by Hillary Clinton, the former Secretary of State and the wife of former President Bill Clinton. Many Americans believe the book is the first step in her efforts to win the presidency.
The book is sort of leaves off with a very tantalizing comment about whether she would or wouldn't run, and says, "I haven't decided yet." But it's, you know, it kind of leaves you hanging.
UN official Navi Pillay criticizes countries for a lack of concern about widespread abuses. And Hillary Clinton remembers her years as America's top diplomat. We will explore these stories today on As It Is. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights recently criticized the international community for failing to stop widespread abuses. Navi Pillay said governments too often place more importance on politics than human rights. She spoke last week to the 47-member UN Human Rights Council. It was her final speech to the council as High Commissioner for Human Rights. In September, Ms. Pillay will have served 6 years in the position. During that time, she has repeatedly spoken up in defense of human rights causes. She often angered countries by putting pressure on governments she believed were guilty of abuses. In her final speech to the council, she deplored the condition of human rights around the world.
Regrettably, the international community remains unable to consistently react strongly and quickly to crises, including situations of grave human rights violations with high potential for regional overspill.
Navi Pillay went to South Sudan in April, a week after widespread violence and killings there. She said she was shocked by the targeted ethnic attacks and risk of widespread food shortages there. She said she was also angered by what she believed was the lack of interest by the leaders of both sides of the conflict. She has also been critical of the widespread violence in the Central African Republic. In her speech, Ms. Pillay described the violence in Syria as a tragedy for the Syrian people and a tragic failure for the cause of human rights. She said the bombings, widespread loss of life, and heavy damage to public services in some areas of the country should anger everyone. And she deplored what she described as the refusal by Syria's government and some opposition groups to seek a peaceful end to the war.
External powers continue to fuel this violence through the supply of arms, military and other material assistance, as well as inflows of foreign fighters. It is shocking that war crimes and crimes against humanity have become commonplace and occur with complete impunity. I am disappointed that the Security Council, with 13 votes in favor and 2 opposed, has been unable to reach agreement on action to ensure accountability for such crimes.
Russia and China have vetoed UN Security Council resolutions on the Syrian conflict. The resolutions would have sent the cases of Syrian officials suspected of war crimes to the International Criminal Court. In her speech, Navi Pillay said violations of human rights involve more than just large-scale abuses. She said human rights begins and ends with the individual. She spoke about the kidnapping of hundreds of schoolgirls by Boko Haram militants in Nigeria. And she talked about the killing in Pakistan of a 23-year-old pregnant woman by her family. The next UN High Commissioner for Human Rights will have to deal with the situation in Ukraine, among other issues. Ms. Pillay leaves as the UN prepares to open an office in South Korea to record widespread abuses in North Korea. Her office is also investigating human rights abuses said to have taken place in the final days of Sri Lanka's civil war with the Tamil Tigers. The Sri Lankan government has said it will not cooperate with the investigation. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Last week, former United States Senator and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton launched a publicity campaign in support of her new book. The book is called Hard Choices. Political observers and reporters say it appears to be tied to a possible campaign for the presidency. The wife of former President Bill Clinton has not yet said whether she will be a candidate in the 2016 presidential election. Ann Guerin is a reporter at the Washington Post newspaper. She has been following Hillary Clinton since the 1990s, and she has read the new book.
The book is sort of leaves off with a very tantalizing comment about whether she would or wouldn't run, and says, "I haven't decided yet." But it's, you know, it kind of leaves you hanging.
In Hard Choices, Ms. Clinton talks about her decisions as Secretary of State. She also discusses her efforts to slow the growth of poverty and working in support of human rights. Ranjita De Silva De Alwis directs the Women in Public Service Project. Ms. Clinton and several women's colleges launched the project in 2011.
Secretary Clinton has put in a lot of effort to first to amplify women's voices around the world. Women galvanize around her leadership. She's not seen just as a woman who belongs to the United States. She belongs to the world. And wherever we go, women say she's one of us.
Ann Guerin says the book tour will give Ms. Clinton's opponents the chance to weaken her politically.
Anything Hillary Clinton says or does from now until the moment she announces will be, you know, in some way countered by Republicans trying to knock a couple holes in the person they see as not only the most likely candidate, but also the strongest of the potential field of Democrats.
And that's As It Is for today. I'm Christopher Cruz. Thanks for joining us on The Voice of America.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Technology is creating major changes in the music industry. Music lovers listen to and buy music on the Internet. They can watch live concerts of favorite artists online. And music makers, as well as music industry officials, use social media to reach and increase public interest. Nick Sherwin is the founder of the band Suburban Skies. He says 21st century technology permits a band to control its own future.
Social media is a wonderful thing, and being able to control your own art and not be signed by a record label, to be your own record label is, I think, liberating.
Sherwin says the internet and social media have created possibilities for musicians. He says the new way to success is to give visitors more than one type of experience.
The most important thing is content. You have to have songs, videos, to be able to get up and do this. But I think it's extremely important to do shows to build your brand, to build your reputation.
Music industry officials discussed the future of the business during an international conference in Los Angeles, California. They said musicians are choosing to perform live across the country following the drop in CD sales in the United States. Rob Light is head of music with a creative artist agency.
The majority of the income for artists now is coming from the live marketplace.
Along with the popularity of live music, there has been an explosion in the number of music festivals. These events are advertised on social media. Pasquale Rotella leads Insomniac, a company that produces electronic dance music festivals in several countries.
Someone could make it in their bedroom and put it out there. And people can gain fans that way online without anyone's help. And that's absolutely helped the growth of dance music.
Bob Pittman leads the radio organization Clear Channel Communications. He says music lovers are still listening to the radio, although there are new ways of finding music. He says 70% of Americans say they discover new music from what they hear on the radio. But Rob Light says radio will soon be a thing of the past.
I don't believe that terrestrial radio will be as relevant to a 12-year-old today in 5 or 6 years. And if you're going to look forward, I think they're going to get their information, that exact information, from other places and other sources.
Nick Sherwin is not worried. He just wants to reach everyone who likes his style of music with the help of the Internet. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Learn English. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Embry. Today, Shirley Griffith and I take you to one of the most beautiful and historic cities in the United States, Charleston, South Carolina. The Civil War began at its waterfront. Come along with us. Charleston sits on a piece of land in the southeastern United States that points like a finger to the Atlantic Ocean. Rivers flow by either side of the city. They are the Ashley and the Cooper Rivers. The people of Charleston will smile and tell you the Ashley and the Cooper join to form the Atlantic Ocean. They know this is not true, but they like to tell the story anyway. It shows how proud the people of Charleston are of their city. Charleston has a very rich history. It is the only city in the United States that can claim to have defended itself from American Indians, fierce pirates, Spanish ships, French soldiers, and British forces. It was first in many things. Charleston had the first continual train service in the United States. It built the first museum and the first public flower garden in America. And the first battle of the American Civil War took place on a very small but important island in its port. Charleston has some of the most beautiful and unusual homes in America. One travel writer has called Charleston the most friendly city in the United States. Charleston is all of these things and much more.
Plan your visit to Charleston for early spring, late autumn, or the winter months. The citizens of Charleston will tell you their lovely city is not fun in the summer. It is extremely hot. The summer heat is important to the history of Charleston. Early settlers owned huge farms called plantations. In the 1700s, these farms produced a plant called indigo, which is used to make cloth the color blue. Many plantation owners forced slaves to do the work needed to grow indigo in the extreme heat. Slavery became important to the economy of Charleston. The plantations, indigo, and slavery are part of the history of the city.
At least three Indian tribes were living in the area that became Charleston when Spanish explorers arrived in 1521. The Spanish explorers, and later French explorers, tried to establish settlements near that area, but none lasted. English settlers first came to the area in 1670. They established a town. They called it Charlestown in honor of the English king, Charles II. The people of the city changed its name to Charleston in 1783.
Many people came to live in Charleston because it produced indigo and had a good port. The people who settled the area were hardworking and independent. They considered themselves citizens of England. Still, they did not like some of the laws declared by the English government. The colonists successfully defended their city many times in the early 1700s. They defended it against both French and Spanish forces and against raids by Yamasee Indians and by pirates. In 1719, the citizens of Charleston rebelled against the group of English men who controlled their colony. They wanted more self-government. Britain's King George agreed. This change gave the people of Charleston a feeling of independence.
Charleston is still proud of its part in the War for Independence. The city provided several political and military leaders during the American Revolution. British forces attacked it two times, but were defeated by the people of Charleston. The third time, the British captured the city and held it for more than a year. Charleston continued to grow after the American colonists had won their independence from England. The new federal government knew that the city was important. Workers began building a strong base to guard Charleston in 1828. This base was on a small island in Charleston Harbor. It was named Fort Sumter. It was designed to guard the city from any future enemy.
There were no thoughts of war or future enemies while Fort Sumter was being built. The plantations near Charleston had begun to plant new crops like rice and cotton. With the help of slave labor, cotton became extremely important to the economy of Charleston and much of the South. Many people in the northern United States began to think that slavery was very wrong, however. Slave owners in the South wanted things to remain as they had always been. They believed the federal government had no right to tell them what they could or could not do.
A national crisis began when Abraham Lincoln was elected president in 1860. The people of South Carolina believed he would try to end slavery by force. They voted to leave the United States. They were quickly followed by other southern states. These southern states soon created the government of the Confederate States of America. Federal troops controlled Fort Sumter when South Carolina voted to leave the Union. The people of Charleston demanded the federal troops leave. The Union commander refused. On the morning of April 12, 1861, a cannon was fired at Fort Sumter. It was the first shot of America's long Civil War. Charleston suffered a lot of damage during the Civil War. Several major battles were fought there. Late in the war, another battle for control of Fort Sumter continued for almost 2 years. Much of Charleston had been destroyed by the time the war ended. Rebuilding the city was a long and slow process.
The people of Charleston tried to save the historic buildings from the 1700s. They wanted to keep those buildings they felt were an important part of their city. The huge plantations near Charleston were also in need of rebuilding. Many owners failed in their efforts because they could no longer use slave labor. Their farms became much smaller.
The historic buildings of Charleston were affected by weather as well as wars. Through the years, ocean storms have severely damaged the city. A major storm struck Charleston in September 1989. It killed 18 people and caused more than $3 billion in damage. The huge storm had winds of more than 217 kilometers an hour. It caused high waves that severely flooded city streets.
The federal, state, and city governments and individual citizens have spent millions of dollars to rebuild and repair historic areas. So in some places, Charleston looks a lot like it has for several hundred years. In the center of the city are stores in small 100-year-old buildings. The same family has owned one of the stores for almost 150 years. Fine eating places throughout the city serve Southern food. The people of Charleston will tell you they have some of the best eating places in the United States. Many visitors agree.
Beautiful old buildings are a major reason thousands of people visit Charleston each year. One of the famous buildings is the Old Exchange and Provost Dungeon. It was built in the early 1700s. It was a jail that held the famous English pirate Stede Bonnet and his crew before they were hanged. Several of the old plantation farms near Charleston also are open to visitors. One is called Boone Hall Plantation. It is still a working farm. Boone Hall Plantation looks much like it did before the American Civil War. It has been used as the setting for a number of movies and television programs about the American South and the Civil War.
From almost anywhere along the waterfront in Charleston, you can see a large American flag flying over the small island that still holds Fort Sumter. Most visitors go to the historic fort during their time in Charleston. Several companies provide boat rides to the fort. Much of the fort was destroyed during the Civil War. But what remains of Fort Sumter is protected by the National Park Service. Park workers meet each boat and explain about the battles that took place.
Charleston has many interesting places to visit. However, the people who live in the city really make it special. They are extremely friendly in a way that is part of the culture of the American South. The people of Charleston continue to keep their city beautiful using modern technology to protect their historic past. Our program was written by Paul Thompson. Internet users can read and listen to more stories on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. With Shirley Griffith, I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for another This Is America from VOA Learning English.